all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
It is 6:06 on this Thursday morning. It's February 29th. Happy Leap Day. It's another beautiful day to have you here up north, live from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're listening. Across the Civic Media Radio Network, through the app, social media, podcast. All the while, we thank you, as always, for being here, for being in touch with us as well. You can do that at 855-75-CIVIC. Again, 855-75-CIVIC. You can call it or text it or use the app to reach out to us. I have a question for you. Do you have a Leap Day baby in your life? And if so, you know, how do they treat that? Are they pretty good natured about, you know, being only 7 years old when they're actually 28? Have they had some great parties? Is it more of an annoyance? If you've got a story about that, we'd be very happy to hear all about it. Let's see. Oh, you know what, Greg? You're absolutely right. Let me say good morning to Greg. He says, I need to adjust my volume. And I noticed that last night as well. So let me see if that's any better.
That's much better.
Yes, because I should have caught that last night. I always talked to Joe Zepecki late in the day on Wednesday. And listening back, I'm like, I had to adjust my volume on all of that. So thank you for reminding me. So I'll ask you, Leap Day, you got any Leap Day babies in your life? Because I do not. I told Christina the other day, I double checked on Facebook. I'm like, do I know anybody with a birthday today? I don't have anybody.
I feel like I do. Like, I feel like I've met people, but no one where I can just be like, oh yeah, my buddy.
Yeah, so we've got nothing like that, and that's why we'd love your story. You can send us a text message, or you can give us a call, or you can put a comment on the Facebook feed where you can see us on video at the Up North News Facebook page, or the Facebook page for Civic Media, for Bull Falls Radio in Wausau, for 93.5 The Tap in Chippewa Falls, our home base over here. Temperatures across Wisconsin right now look like this, 6 degrees here on Lake Wissota. It's 6 below. Up in Hayward, Park Falls is at 3 below zero right now. Wausau, 5 degrees above. Green Bay, 7 above. La Crosse, 12. Wisconsin Rapids, 5 above. Oshkosh, 12 degrees. Madison, 13 right now. And where Greg is in Waukesha, it is 10 degrees. And meteorologist Brittany Merlot will tell us in a little bit that we're going to warm up starting today and get right back to the downright spring-like temperatures that we have been experiencing lately. And with tomorrow being March 1st, I feel like we should queue up, you know, Barry Manilow's Look Like We Made It, Greg, and we could play that, because I don't see, again, apart from maybe a wet, heavy snowfall someplace, I think we've made it through. Once you get done with February here, the potentially worst of winter. What you get after this is an annoyance.
Well, it's been funny. I've been listening to people complain. And I'm like, I always have to say to them, look, we got off real easy. It's not good for the earth, but for winter, if you have to deal with 4 or 5 days in late February where it's cold, I mean,
I worked so hard yesterday to clean off the snow from the previous night off my driveway. And by working hard, I mean, I looked out the window hour by hour as the sun brought the asphalt back to it, because it's a south facing thing. And that's probably going to, honestly, if we got anything less than 6 inches, it's like, we'll drive over it for a day or two, because then it's going to be done.
Yeah.
So congratulations to everybody. We've made Pat, it to that point. Go, everybody! Congratulations! There we go.
You
see, ask what it is? It's the good vibes that I brought back from Jamaica. It's all about. Very nice. Coming up today on the program, hey, how nice would it be to get paid to take 10 months off of work? That's what Wisconsin legislators want to do now that Republican leadership is starting to bring things to an end for the year, despite getting a full-time salary. We're going to talk to Joe Zepecki about things the legislature could have done but chose not to, and the many ways that that impacts people across Wisconsin and will throughout the course of the year as these men and women go back and campaign for re-election. In our second hour, it's new and it's blue. The new blue pack. The new is an acronym for Northeast Wisconsin. And we're going to talk to the executive director of the new blue pack, Julie Hancock. It's a group that is set up for Northeast Wisconsin women who want to see changes made in election results all across the 8th Congressional District. We'll also talk at 7:20 to State Representative Jody Emerson from over here in the Chippewa Valley with an update on how Governor Tony Evers helped improve a relief plan for the Chippewa Valley as two hospitals get set to close. There was a way for the legislature to really put some support behind healthcare in the Chippewa Valley. In some ways, the Republican leadership chose not to do that. But with Governor Evers' use of the line item veto, he was able to take their bill and make some improvements to it. So Representative Emerson will tell us more about that. And we are going to get a preview of one of our other civic media shows that we don't get to talk about as often. On Thursdays, we normally have Luke Mathers in here, but Mr. Mathers is off this week. And so to give us a preview of today's Matinere on Air from 10 to noon, with Jane Matinere, we will have the legend herself, Jane Matinere, who does this show along with her sidekick, Craig Brockmeyer, I believe it is.
I'm Craig Brockmeyer, here today to talk about the news. The news is Eisenhower has been reelected.
I am. Did you ever see Brockmeyer, the series with, what's his name, Hank Azaria?
Yeah.
As a washed-up. I loved that series. Oh, I loved the first season. I wasn't crazy about the others. Amanda Peet was the co-star in there. Funny show.
Very funny.
Couldn't possibly run it on network TV. But
no, I can't. Say most of the things he said on that show.
No, Brockmeyer was one funny show there. So now Jane, we're not giving her too much inconvenience here. I mean, she normally comes in there right around 8 or so, and the two of you start working on that 10 a.m. show and everything that's going on. So have you got anything special planned for her earlier arrival? Did you bring donuts or anything like that?
Oh, I brought donuts, but I hate them. I brought I brought a blanket, but I'm using it. And no.
Okay. No. You know what? I think she'll be okay. She's extremely self-sufficient
way. Yes, indeed.
I am very much looking forward to talking with her on our program here. We have a busy run of shows next week already scheduled for you. Next Monday at 7:30, we're going to be talking to the former U.S. Attorney for the Western District of Wisconsin, John Vaudre, on judicial security and the increasing concern, especially in today's political climate, that judicial security needs to be beefed up all the more. On Tuesday, we're going to be talking to Wausau Mayor Katie Rosenberg. She's involved in a run for re-election and already has a dark money group out there spending money against her, which to me, I think you've got to be really proud. You should be happy that you scare some people so much that they have to go into their deep pockets and spend anonymous money against you. But more importantly, we're also going to talk about PFAS. Wausau has a lot of experience trying to get those industrial chemicals out of the water supply. So she has some things to say about the legislative Republicans who are sitting on $125 million and so far refusing to spend it to clean up PFAS contamination. Also on Tuesday, our regular biweekly visit with Hans Breitenmoser, we're going to talk about a whole passel of rural economic development projects that have been announced through both the Biden administration and the Evers administration. I think I said that right, Greg. I said a whole passel of projects. I didn't hear the old man bell, so I didn't know if maybe I'd use the word improperly.
It was so old. It was so
for the bell.
My
hadn't invented the bell yet.
My bell exploded. I went to tap it and it was just like, mm-hmm. Not today, sir.
Not going to do it. The hosts of Busted Pencils will join us on Wednesday, as will Congressman Mark Pocan. And then next Thursday, Wisconsin Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski will be Kristen Lyerly's guest on next week's Women Win Wisconsin segment. So we have no shortage of things to talk about next week with so many guests. Anyway, this is the point where I tell you, being it's Thursday morning, that a new edition is out of the Courier Newsroom podcast, Vibes Only. You know, sometimes they're good vibes, sometimes they're bad vibes. But we're talking all about the vibe. Yeah, there it is. The vibes of the presidential campaign. Brian Derrick and Glenys Mahar, they spoke with Emily Amick, a former counsel for the Senate Judiciary Committee, who runs a very popular social media account called Emily in Your Phone. And it's filled with news explainers about what's happening in the political climate out there. And so they will talk about that. And they will talk about last weekend's CPAC convention of far-right conservatives essentially bragging about wanting to end democracy in the United States. So head over to couriernewsroom.com or wherever you get your podcasts, and keep an eye out for the Good Vibes podcast, or Vibes Only podcast. On the website, upnorthnews.wi.com, how to see a solar eclipse that is coming up in early April. It will be partial in Wisconsin, total in other parts of the country. So you can read about that on our website right now. On social media, with Selena Heller talked to us on Monday. You can see on Instagram the video version of her story about farmers trying out winter barley and using that for craft brewing for beer makers all around Wisconsin. We talked about how Girl Scout cookies across Wisconsin may look the same but taste different. That story is on social media right now. And tributes to Cherry Starr, the widow of Bart Starr, who died on Tuesday at the age of 89. And then still to come this week, Kia Vakil tomorrow morning, along with Mark Jacob. We're going to talk about how the Russia connection to the, you know, Hunter Biden alleged scandal is being recklessly underplayed by national media. And of course, Dan Schumacher will be along, and we will talk about sports that's coming up into the weekend. And in sports from last night, one thing that's noteworthy to pass along: the fifth ranked Marquette men's basketball team beat Providence 91-69. They will next play Saturday afternoon in Omaha versus Creighton. The Bucks play the Hornets in Charlotte tonight, and the Badger men's basketball team returns home on Saturday to play 13th-ranked Illinois. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this leap day, February 29th, when you're here, you're up north, live from Lake Wasota on the Civic Media Radio Network. That clarinet there. I'll talk about the clarinet, but now listen to this original version of a song you do know.
Georgia, Georgia, the whole day through.
That's Hoagy Carmichael and his orchestra. That's the original version of Georgia on My Mind from 1930. It's in the Grammy Hall of Fame. The clarinet solo is being played by jazz musician and band leader Jimmy Dorsey, who was born on this day in 1904 in Pennsylvania to a coal mining family that included his older brother and future band leader, Tommy Dorsey. So there's your little history lesson preview for the day.
I thought this song was written by Ray Charles.
By Ray Charles. And honestly, the first time I heard it for years was the Willie Nelson version, you know, which tells you... Because, you know what you grew up in, and I grew up at a time when my parents were going through like a country music phase.
Yeah.
And so you heard that phase as well. So, yeah, yesterday was actually the first time I'd heard about that as I was reading up on Jimmy Dorsey. So we've got all that to go with here. Unpacking the news now at 6:21. The news out of the U.S. Supreme Court, I have to say, is troubling. And it's also one that I predicted. I wish I weren't right, but I was right, that the far-right conservative justices on the U.S. Supreme Court are working with or for former President Donald Trump to continue to delay any justice that might be brought for his election interference. And somebody who sees just the headlines might think, well, wait, Pat, no, wait. Didn't the U.S. Supreme Court agree yesterday to hear the case about Trump, claiming that presidents should have, you know, absolute power and full immunity. Yes, but they dragged their feet getting there. But more importantly, they didn't have to hear this case. Now, this is all part of the special counsel Jack Smith investigation, the federal investigation into Trump's attempts to overturn an American election, to rig it, to cheat it, to undermine it, with the violence that erupted alongside it that he knew was happening and did nothing to stop once it started. He's claiming absolute immunity, and a judge has said no. And then it went to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, and they didn't just say no. I mean, it was a smackdown. It was airtight, saying in so many words, the legalistic version of, you're full of crap. The Supreme Court does not have to take up everything that comes to them from the appeals court. They don't. Many times they refuse to hear a case without comment. And it's their way of saying, we've read the appeals court judgment, and it's airtight, and there's really nothing more to add. And the Supreme Court could have done that weeks ago, or they could have decided weeks ago, okay, fine, we're gonna hear it. Instead, they've waited weeks, and now have said, yep, we'll hear it, and we're not going to hear arguments until April 22nd. Let's keep in mind, from legal commentator Tristan Snell, the Supreme Court back in 2000 heard and decided Bush v. Gore in 3 days. That's how you expedite a case of national importance, not a couple of months. But that's what this Supreme Court is willing to do. And Daily Beast columnist David Rothkopf also puts it quite clearly, saying, let's not beat around the bush. This decision to hear the case is outrageous and at its heart fundamentally corrupt. The appeals court decision was bulletproof, and there is no case Trump has any sort of immunity. The decision not to hear it until late April makes further significant trial delays likely. They are deliberately delaying the trial without any reasonable legal reason to do so. This is a political decision, he writes, and in my estimation, it is an ugly one. And I can't argue with it except for this point. And it's not an insignificant point, I will admit. But the Supreme Court, other analysts say, want a Supreme Court stamp on this case. If a president is going to claim absolute immunity, that they can order the political assassination of their rivals and not face justice, the Supreme Court should make very clear where it stands. Again, that's fine. But I will tell you again, the Supreme Court in 2000 took up Bush v. Gore in 3 days because they understood that time was of the essence in this kind of an instance. And that's exactly what this Supreme Court could have done, should have done, decided not to do. On Capitol Hill, the government shutdown has been punted yet again for, I think, the fourth time now. And it's not, look, we're not going to see any big developments this weekend. And it could be that what we're putting off is the inevitable, that this just goes all the way through the year and there is no shutdown, but then there also is no change in the budget. And we've talked earlier about how there should be some changes in the budget, and Democrats and Republicans should come together and reach agreement on things like the Farm Bill. But they're not going to now. Speaker Mike Johnson told his fellow Republicans back last weekend that they should not expect the inclusion of many of their major policy priorities, but that he did expect to secure a number of smaller victories. Among the measures that Republicans have sought are one that would, again, these are the Republican demands to not have a government shutdown. One would curtail access to abortion medication. Another, this one's stunning, restrict the Department of Veterans Affairs from flagging veterans deemed mentally incompetent in a federal background check needed to buy a gun. So again, if a veteran is deemed mentally incompetent, the Department of Veterans Affairs right now can flag them and it will come up in a federal background check when they go to buy a weapon, and Republicans don't want that to happen. Again, I'm not making any political arguments here. I'm just telling you what they're demanding, and you decide if that's reasonable and responsible or not. They have also tried to block an effort by Democrats to increase funding for nutrition programs, for low-income women and children, because again, why not go full Snidely Whiplash? You know, when you're doing this kind of thing. Looking at what? Oh, I told you yesterday. I think one of their demands was to bring the Homeland Security Secretary's salary to zero. They also want to defund all climate change actions and prohibit funding for diversity and inclusion training. These are all the things that Republicans were demanding in order to give Speaker Johnson enough Republican votes. We all know that right now, Speaker Johnson could bring to the floor matters that would keep the government open and that would provide desperately needed aid to Ukraine. But Republicans for a generation now have abided by something called the Hastert Rule, named for a disgraced child sexual offender who served as Speaker of the House. The Hastert Rule was, well, even if it's got majority support, thanks to Democratic help, we're not bringing it up unless it has a majority of Republican support, which is a hell of a way to run a democracy. But that is exactly what Republicans have been doing ever since. So even though, again, you have the votes there to keep the government open, Speaker Johnson has been holding back on that. The same could be said for a border security bill as well. And again, it's their right to do all this, but now they're going to be running for re-election and having to tell people, well, the border is a big issue and, you know, all these other things are big issues, but that they would rather see a government shutdown rather than negotiate with Democrats to actually get things done. Stephanie Hoff, I believe, is in for Pam Yonke on the Midwest Farm Report. And then Joe Zepecki follows right here on Up North News Radio on the Civic Media Radio Network.
My Georgia, no peace I've.
Back on this Thursday morning with Joseph Mackey, we're talking about a legislature that honestly I thought would still be in session, and I guess technically the Senate still is, but you know, I go away for a week and come back and find out the Assembly has said essentially we're out of here. And stop me if you've heard this before.
I think they decided they wanted that Pat Kreitlow life. Weren't you on vacation last week? They thought, well, if it's good enough for Pat, it's good enough for us.
For a whole week, not 10 months, and not funded by the taxpayers. Good morning, Joe. This is a familiar story for a legislature that is actually, this is not something made up. Their actual status is a full-time legislature.
Right. There are legislatures around the country who only work for a month every couple years or are paid like part-time staff. Here in Wisconsin, we technically have and pay for a full-time legislature, but that is not what we get.
No, not by any stretch of the imagination for that more than $50,000 salary. And look, you can make the case that a legislature should be part-time. When I was in the legislature and people said, well, why are you full-time? I said, well, because at any given point, you could be asked to pass something very important. And, you know, it's not a bad thing to actually have somebody working at governance all year long. But then 2020 came along and the legislature clocked out in early March, just as COVID was hitting, and they never came back in the rest of the year to do anything in terms of pandemic relief. All they did was, you know, barked at Governor Tony Evers from the sidelines. So they continue making the best case possible that we should cut their pay since they don't feel like working.
Yeah, and I think one of the realities of politics is they didn't feel like they paid a price for not doing anything, for not showing up to work, and for just sniping at the governor from the sidelines. What people have rightly pointed out is that under the old maps, there could not be any accountability or political consequences for inaction. And that is one of the reasons that the move by the governor to sign the maps and the fact that there are now fairer maps in play for this fall means that for the first time in a very long time, there can be some political accountability, that people who are rightly frustrated by a legislature that says, it's late February, I think we're done here, let's call it a year. You know, you can be upset about that. There's lots of reasons to be upset about that. And the case against Republicans in legislative race by legislative race is not only going to revolve around what Republican legislators did. In many ways, you can make an argument for what they didn't do.
And that's what we're going to spend a lot of time talking about this morning, the things that they didn't do. And again, these are things where they can have a disagreement, but they just decided just to leave things undone. You could argue most notably among them. Well, I mean, there's so many. I was going to say, you could start with child care because you had so many providers talk about going out of business. But there's also Badger Care expansion, but we've been talking about that for years. PFAS, which, again, they approved the money. There's Monday ballot.
Yeah, let's press on that one for a second. I mean, okay, Governor Evers is basically beside himself today saying, you authorized $125 million, release the damn money, and they continue to refuse to do that. Why it takes a second vote is beyond me and the checks and balances knowledge I have, but it seems pretty straightforward that if the legislature said, okay, you can use this money for this, and the governor says, okay, this is how we're going to do it, it's time to do it. What are we waiting for?
I do wonder that lawsuit that Governor Evers filed against the legislature about this. Granted, some of the original points have been rendered moot, but I still think that there is a legal ruling to be had out there as far as whether the legislature can really give itself, you know, two cracks at voting, you know, for something. But let's not get into too far into the legal weeds. The crux of the matter is they approved PFAS funding, but they also didn't. And so nothing is being done because they want to protect polluters. I mean, they'll take umbrage at it, but when you look at what they really are intending here, they talk about the innocent landowner. It seems like there are safeguards in there already, and that really this is just about doing, you know, the bidding of Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce.
Yeah, it's a terrible look, and people need to be able to trust that the water coming out of their tap is healthy and is not going to make them and their kids sick. And when these PFAS levels rise, it needs to be remediated. We've been through this before. It's a somewhat complicated process. It requires resources, but it can be done. But it can't be done if you leave municipalities holding the bag and you don't provide support from the state. And ultimately, let's be clear, the polluters should be the ones who pay for this. That process, however, takes years to make its way through courts. And so the state stepping up and saying, we're going to surge some resources to communities so that they can address these challenges. And then later on, when there's hopefully a judgment in a court, the state can recoup some of that money. That's a win-win, but it's what has to happen because you cannot wait 3 years, 4 years for a legal process to play out. And in the meantime, not be able to trust the drinking water coming out of your fountain.
Exactly. I mean, that's how the process should work, unless for some reason, you don't want to solve the problem. And that takes us to our next topic, which will be election reform. The people who love to talk about those late night, middle of the night vote totals coming in from the big bad cities, you know, Milwaukee and others. There's a way to fix that. There's a bipartisan agreement by and large on how you would fix that, and it's not going to get fixed in time for this November, is it?
No, and if it came to the floor, it would pass, full stop, with bipartisan support. So this is known as the Monday processing bill. And so basically, right now there's early voting in person for about 2 weeks before elections. If you've ever done that before, you know you basically are filling out an absentee ballot. You are putting it in an envelope, you are filling out that envelope, you are sealing it, and then you are putting it in with the rest of the absentee ballots. So in the five largest communities, Milwaukee, Madison, Green Bay, a couple other larger cities.
We're seeing Kenosha,
that have central count facilities. There's no early voting on Monday, the day before the election. And then on Tuesday, when it's election day, polls open at 7, polls close at 8, and there's an awful lot of work to do in the meantime. What this bill would do would be to allow election officials on Monday, the day before the election, to just start processing some of those ballots. Not even count them, is my understanding. It is to just open up the envelopes, sort them by ward, or, you know, where they need to be readied to be counted after the polls close. And Republicans, there are reasonable Republicans who have said this has to get done. It is not great for confidence in elections when we make things harder on our biggest cities. And there's what we insiders know is called like a red mirage. Mm-hmm. And vote totals can change because it's a 10,000 vote margin statewide. But individual, you know, municipalities, most notably Milwaukee, can at 1 or 2 in the morning finally get around to processing those ballots and counting them. And it changes the statewide count. Republicans had an opportunity. They still do. They have an opportunity to make that process easier, to make it more likely that we, the people of Wisconsin, know who has won or lost an election before we go to bed on election night. And they are choosing, specifically, Devin Lemieux is choosing to foster an environment where Donald Trump and Ron Johnson and Michael Gableman and the pillow knucklehead can sow disinformation and confusion about our elections and engage in conspiracy theories like the big lie that get at the fabric of our democracy and make it harder for us to do anything. That is a policy choice that Devin Lemieux and Republicans are making, and it's shameful.
It is, because it's just like the bipartisan border security bill. They know a solution is there. They keep saying they want a solution, but they would rather block a solution so that they can continue to scare people.
They would rather be able to cry foul the morning after, even though there's nothing nefarious to see. It's disgusting.
Rather than actually get something done. This next one's kind of a throwaway because, again, it's Lucy and the football. And it's how every session some Republicans say, this is going to be the year for legal cannabis, you know, marijuana legalization, or at least just medicinal marijuana or some other variation. And, I mean, as soon as I heard how convoluted, you know, the idea was this year, I thought there's just no way. And, Joe, it turns out there was just no way.
Yeah, the Voss proposal was nonsense from the start. He did it just so he could try to get a little less pressure from people and say, oh, yeah, we're looking at it. We've got a bill. You know, we're studying it. But it was laughable from jump. And anybody paying attention knew he was never going to bring that to the floor for a vote. And so now we've got a couple of examples that Democratic candidates for the state legislature can go around the state and say, you want to have a real debate about legal cannabis in this state? You got to vote for Democrats for the state legislature. You want to improve the way we administer elections? You got to vote for a Democrat. We got to have Democrats in the state legislature and Democratic control, which is now within reach due to these maps. But there's a conversation to have. We kind of blew right by the Badger Care expansion overall, but I also want to really harp in on the maternal Medicaid expansion. Right now, 46 states.
Yeah, for extending postpartum care. And trust me, Dr. Lyerly is going to be coming in here shortly, and she's going to be loaded for bear on this too, and rightly so.
46 states have done this. The state Senate passed it 32-1. 32-1. And if it came up for a vote in the state assembly, it would pass by another overwhelming bipartisan majority. But Robin Voss is standing in the way and saying, he's not even going to bring it for a vote. My people need 10 months vacation. And it's just, it's gross. But that's what we've come to get from a Republican legislature dominated by individuals like Robin Voss.
It is. It's absolutely gross that you could have extended Medicaid coverage for women to 1 year from the current 60 days, right? And it's not happening. Nor is Badger Care expansion, nor is the minimum wage. But before I run out of time, we're going to move on to a couple of other matters. There's the U.S. Senate race. And
yeah, it's the first time we've gotten to talk about it.
It is. And I'm just going to limit it at this time to Eric Hovde. He's not having the best launch ever. I'm not saying it was the worst by any stretch, but it hasn't been great. And one of the most recent examples is him saying in so many words, you know, Democrats want to defund the police, when it doesn't take much to fact check that Republican budgets are the things that lead to, you know, police departments being cash strapped at the local level.
And no one in the state of Wisconsin has defunded the police. No major city, no minor city. This is not a thing that has happened anywhere. And it just goes to show you should probably live in the communities that you're trying to represent. And I don't know what's going on out in Laguna Beach. I don't know what's going on in Orange County or in California. And that's why I'm not going and running for the United States Senate or even dog catcher in California. But Eric Hovde thinks he knows better. He thinks because he owns a $2.8 billion valuation bank that he's smarter than everybody else and he can just drop into the state of Wisconsin and buy his way into a Senate seat. My favorite thing is that he couldn't even last in the state 10 days since dropping the flag on his campaign. He was already out in D.C. earlier this week. He couldn't make it 2 weeks. He can't spend two straight weeks in the state of Wisconsin. Unbelievable.
I can see we're gonna have a little count up calendar for all of his many visits in out of the state. And then finally, of course, you know, you told us early on the Bucks, they need to do what they can to shore up their defense, and it was showing, and then it got worse. It appears to have gotten better.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the Bucks are only 8-8 since making the coaching change, but since the All-Star break, the Bucks are looking incredible. Absolutely took it to the Hornets earlier this week. I think the largest margin of victory, really impressive win against the Timberwolves. It is clear in watching them, the defense has improved. I think they've gone from like 22nd in the NBA under Griffin to top 10 under Doc Rivers. If you want to learn more, go to theringer.com. It's a great website. They've got an analysis of the Bucks' defensive improvements and asking the question, are the Bucks once again the team to beat in the East? This is now we're talking. Now we're talking. We're the beasts in the East.
Joe Specky, thank you so much as always. Have a great start to the weekend. Talk to you next week. We will be back with you in just a moment. You're up north. Bobby Darin, the number six song on this day in 1960. Not number one because number six was as high as it got, but we wanted to pass along a great way to start the segment. If Kristen Lyerly ever writes an autobiography, it should be titled Enter Dancing, because we haven't even said hi yet. She pops in right at the very end of the commercial break, hears the music, and breaks into dance right away. I want to be you when I grow up. How are you?
I'm good. I'm loaded for bear.
Good. Well, we'll get to this.
I loaded for bear about postpartum Medicaid extension. Like, yes. Let's talk about
okay.
it.
Okay.
Yes. So we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But first, getting back to the matter at hand here. Let's see. On this day in 1968... at the Grammy Awards, there was a new category, Best Female R&B Vocal. It would go to young Aretha Franklin for this little ditty. So she won it in 1968 for Respect, the brand new Grammy in Best Female R&B Vocal Performance. She would go on to win the award the next year, 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 the next year. I had to count on my fingers. The next 7 years, she would go on to win the Grammy.
That's a level of respect. That's a way to come out of the gates right there.
She's like the John Oliver of female R&B singers.
Yes, coming out strong. A couple of historical notes. On this day in 1940, Hattie McDaniel became the first Black American to win an Academy Award for her performance as Mammy in Gone with the Wind. On this day in 1796, the Jay Treaty between the U.S. and Great Britain came into force, facilitating 10 years of peaceful trade between the two nations, and then eventually the War of 1812 would come along. Melancholy anniversary today for something that was discovered on this day in 1980, a pair of glasses that belonged to rock and roll legend Buddy Holly. All of my love, all of my kissing, you don't know what you've been missing, oh boy.
Oh boy. When you're with me, oh boy. Oh boy. The whole world can see that you.
don't know what we're meant. When I hear a song like that, I just kind of have that 50s thing. But when you listen closely to his vocal intonations and his attitude, you understand why Elvis and the Beatles and everybody else, they're looking at him. They're looking at him going, he's the guy. He and the Everly Brothers.
Yep.
But anyway, it was on.
And you know, they played the gig, the last gig that they played in Iowa before they all died in that plane crash. They played here in Green Bay. There's a little monument in front of the Riverside Theater in Green Bay.
Yeah, along with some of the other stops along that tour. Well, it was on this day in 1980 that his iconic glasses, which were lost in the plane crash, were actually found in an evidence locker by the local sheriff on this day in 1980. They'd been found 2 months after the crash, turned into police. They went into a locker or a box, and they stayed there for the next 21 years.
They went into a lock box.
I wasn't going to say it, but I'm glad you did, Al. Thank you. Birthday today for Ja Rule, who's 48 today.
Oh,
he was born Jeffrey Atkins in Queens, New York. Here he is with Ashanti.
They were like, quick. They're like, quick, we need a new Tupac. Get that guy.
Yeah. I like his voice. I like his voice very much. He was described by one music critic as a leading figure in 2000s hip-hop for his blending of gangsta rap with commercially oriented pop sensibilities. You know I read that line just for you, Greg. That's right. Today, Ja Rule. Ja Rule is 48 years old today.
Happy birthday to Ja Rule, 48 years old, gangster rapper and pop sensation.
All right, let's go back to something more my speed. Davy Jones of the Monkees passed away this day in 2012 at the age of 66. On the national calendar today, because it's Leap Day, there's not a lot on there, because otherwise your day only comes up every 4 years. So today is Digital Learning Day. Okay, fine. But this one, I think, exemplifies it best. Why this? You don't want a national day that's once every 4 years. Today is National Toast Day. Poor toast.
Who picked that?
Can't get
that?
No respect.
Man, toast needs a better lobbying arm. Today should be national. Yeah, we get it, Jeff. You're 9 years old today. Ha ha.
Ha ha. You're really 36. You're nine. How about you, Kristen? Neither Greg nor I really have any leap babies in our lives. Any friends or family members? Do you?
Mm-mm, no, and I have not delivered a baby on leap year.
What?
On leap
day.
Seriously?
Interesting.
Mm-mm. Wow. Okay. Well, there you go. There's our challenge. If anybody in the Green Bay area happens to be in labor and begins contracting,
I'm ready.
Head to Kristen's driveway, and we'll.
She lives at number one Happy Street.
Yeah. All right. Again, serious story coming up. Especially, are you able to hang around at 7:06 to talk more, or do you have to bail out? Okay. In case we run out of time here, because there's one other thing I have to note. From Kristen's Facebook feed, I was frightened for a moment scrolling through Facebook, and she posted a picture of me at the age of like 15. It was not me. It was son number four,
Little Pat Kreitlow, LPK.
Little PK,
Padalito.
You have another driver in the family.
Yep, the caboose. Number four got his temps yesterday.
Oh boy.
Does he like that you refer to him as the caboose? I mean,
You know, he is a very tolerant person. I mean, he's grown up with the nickname Bubba, although now that he's 15, he is kind of tired of it and he doesn't really want to be known as Bubba anymore.
Oh, I would own that. Oh. go for a little PK. embrace the Bubba.
He's so easy and he's so funny. And, you know, like all of my kids are just delightful. I don't know what I would do without my kids, because they are just a constant source of entertainment.
Well, of the four boys then, because I always like trying to get, you know, somebody in trouble with their kids. So now you got four drivers. Who was the easiest and who was the hardest when it came to teaching them to drive?
Lindsay, I think the third one, who's 17 now, has been pretty easy. It's been very natural for him. Abe was the hardest, the oldest. I mean, he would just like inattentively roll through stop signs and like not even know it happened. I'd be like, Did you see the stop sign? What was happening there?
hope you fixed that habit. All right, Dr. Lyerly has a couple of things in the news that we really need to talk about, which we will do in just a bit here. And then she has her Women Win Wisconsin segment talking about the new blue pack. That's all coming up in the second hour of Up North News Radio, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network.